Rashi opens up our parsha with an explanation of why the parsha begins with Aaron HaKohen receiving the job of lighting the menorah, immediately right after the last parsha, which ended off describing the korbanos that the Nesiim of each Shevet brought for the inauguration of the Mizbeach. At first glance, it would seem that the menorah breaks up the flow of the storyline, which is really discussing how the Avodah and the Mishkan was started up. Right after talking about the menorah now, the parsha is about to speak about how the Leviim were inaugurated to begin to serve in the Mishkan. So it would make sense to talk about that right after the korbanos of the Nesiim, which was inaugurating the Mizbeach. Describing the lighting of the menorah seems like something that should have been in Parshas Truma, or Tetzaveh, or in Sefer Vayikra. Rashi brings the Midrash that explains that when Aaron saw all the leaders bringing their korbanos, he became weak of heart, that he didn't have a part in that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded to Aaron's deep frustration, Chayecha shelcha gedola mishalahem, sha'atam madlik umeti v'taneros. On your life, Aaron, the job that you will now be given will be even greater than theirs, the lighting and preparing of the menorah. Rav Chaim Kafusi was a great Talmud Chacham in Egypt at the end of the 1500s into the 1600s. He was considered a Talmud of the Arizal, and he was also otherwise known as Rav Chaim Baal HaNes because of an unbelievable public miracle that happened once involving him. But we're going to get back to that later. So Rav Chaim Kafusi asks in his Sefer, Be'or HaChaim, that we know from Chazal that the word Dibur in Chumash is considered a sharp and strong way to speak, implying some kind of rebuke. And the word Amira, Amar, is considered softer and appeasing. Why then does HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe, Daber el Aaron? It implies that when Aaron was first commanded to light the menorah, it started with a certain rebuke, which subsequently softened. What rebuke was the Kodesh Baruch Hu giving to Aaron HaKohen? Rav Kafusi Baal HaNes answers that min haShamayim there was a taina on Aaron HaKohen. You feel weakened, frustrated, that you didn't bring a korban? But you could have. Who stopped you? The Nesiim weren't personally invited to bring their korbanos. No one skipped over you. The Nesiim had initiated their korbanos and you didn't. In Parshas Naso, Rav Chaim Kafusi had explained the psukim v'yakrivu ha-Nesiim as Chanukas ha-Mizbeach b'yom himashech oso, v'yakrivu ha-Nesiim as korbanom lifnei ha-Mizbeach. The pasuk mentions twice that the Nesiim brought their korbanos closer and closer to the Mizbeach. And it's only in the next pasuk that Hashem tells Moshe to accept from the Nesiim their korbanos and to take each one of them on a separate day. Rav Kafusi explained that we see that the Nesiim never were commanded to bring these korbanos. They just had such a burning desire to serve Hashem that they couldn't help but bring all that they wanted to sacrifice as close as possible to the Mizbeach as they were able, and hope that Hashem would actually end up taking their sacrifices, which Hashem did. Aaron, you could have done the same thing that the Nesiim did, and you didn't. And that's why the word Dibur is used at first with Aaron HaKohen. Rav Shalom Meir Valach points out that what's amazing is that right after that, Aaron was given a task that Hashem said was even greater than the korbanos, because he was given the lighting of the menorah. Do you hear that, everyone? That priceless and eternal present to light the menorah every day was Bezchus Aaron's disappointment for falling short on what he could have done. The pain he felt for messing up, for not being on his game, his tears for not having done what he should have, merited Aaron something more precious than he ever would have gotten had he never messed up to begin with. Did you ever notice that the same thing happened to Klai Yisrael right after the regret that they had and the tshuva process that they went through following Chet Egel? Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu the Yugim Amidas HaRachamim, and he taught him how to daven with them and promised that if the Yugim Amidas HaRachamim are mentioned in the right way, then that would be a tefillah that would never fail whenever used. this powerful tefillah of the Yogim Omidas HaRachamim never would have been given had the downfall of Chaita Egel not happened. Rav Tzadok HaKohen in Sitkas HaTzadik, Os Kufnun Aleph, brings an incredible yisod. He writes that when one cries in pain over his bad decisions and for lost and wasted opportunities that he let slip through his fingers, those cries pave the way and serve as a ladder for an Aliyah Gedola, a huge step upwards. Rav Tzadok brings the Nesiim themselves as an example for this. Rashi had asked in Nusso and in Vayakhel, why were the Nesiim so forthcoming with bringing korbanos at the inauguration of the Mizbeach, when earlier, when everybody was bringing donations from the Mishkan, they were the last ones to donate? Rashi brings the Midrash that at the time of the donations, the Nesiim said to themselves, let everyone donate whatever they could, and then we'll see what's left, what's still needed by the Mishkan, and that's what we'll donate. In the end, the Nesiim weren't needed for any of the vessels or any of the building parts. Everything was already taken care of by everyone else, and all that was left was the gems for the clothing of the Kohanim, which where would they get that from anyway? Hashem was upset with the Nesiim's decision to push off their donations to the end. And Chazal say that that's why their name, Nesiim, is written without a yud in Parshas Vayakhel when it's discussing their final donation. But the Nesiim deeply regretted their decision. Not the type of regret that breaks a person. Not the type of regret that makes a person lose hope and give up. The opposite. The regret that the Nesiim had was the source for their determination at the time of the inauguration of the Mizbeach to right their wrong. The painful realization that they messed up when it came to donating to the building of the Mishkan fueled the huge step up that they took when the next opportunity came. This time they wouldn't make the same mistake, and they jumped on the opportunity to bring korbanos at the earliest moment. The Gemara in Yuma Ayin Heim and Aleph darshens the word Nesiim without a yud as alluding to clouds. The word Nesiim could mean clouds. And the Gemara says that after the Nesiim's frustration for not having what to give, clouds miraculously raised precious stones from Nahar Pishon and dropped them right in front of the tents of the Nesiim for them to be able to bring them to be used as the Avnei Shoam and Avnei Miluim for the Ephod and the Choshen. These stones were more valuable and precious than anything donated until now. And they never would have had them to give had it not been for their original mistaken decision to wait until the end. But when they realized the ramifications of their actions for pushing off giving, and they saw there was nothing left to give for the Mishkan, and they shouldn't have pushed it off, they felt a sincere, painful feeling of regret and a powerful wish that they would have donated something, and that engendered the miracle of what the clouds brought them to donate, and it left within them an intense pull to bring korbanos at the first moment possible, and that's how they were zocha to the korbanos of the Nesiim. And it's that same power of picking oneself up after a fall that led to Aaron being given the gift of lighting the menorah. And finishes Rav Tzadok, this idea is beautifully hinted at in the pasuk in Tehillim Kuf Mem Zayin. The pasuk says, "Hamachaseh shemayim avim," when the sky fills up with dark clouds, which could be referring to the Nesiim's original laziness that clouded the sky with darkness. "Hameichin la'aretz matar," but the dark clouds were really just a preparation for a rainfall of blessing to fall upon the land. When you first see dark clouds across the sky, everything looks dark, dreary, hopeless. But really, that's when the setting is right for rain to start to fall. Rain that will bring forth growth and life. I've heard that survivors of the death camps claim you could tell just by looking at somebody if they had a chance to survive. How? You look into their eyes. If there was an extinguished look of despair and hopelessness in their eyes, then you knew it was unlikely that that person would make it. But if you look into someone's eyes and you see a fire of hope and determination, that they were determined to fight and they were not going to give up, then you knew this guy is going to make it. And you know what? You could see the future of a bachar also by the look in their eyes when they're struggling. Because you know, everyone falls a lot of times. What separates the men from the boys is how determined you are to never give up, to fight through no matter what. You remember the boxing scenes from the movies? If a boxer was beaten to a pulp and knocked flat on the ground, if he would then pull himself up in the ring and keep fighting, he was the hero that melted your heart. That guy was the winner. And when the dark clouds of falling move aside, that's when the rain comes that brings forth unbelievable growth by the person that picks himself up.